You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bedsheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code BetterHelp.com/Wanderers. That's BetterHelp.com/Wanderers. Let's get back to the show. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Rich Hobbs here. Joining me tonight, I've got Tom Gibson and Jeffo. Yes, we are going to be talking about Wolves' defeat to Newcastle. We'll also talk about the latest news on the injury front, and we'll also briefly discuss the club's finances that got released at the end of this week as well. I guess, boys, before we kind of go into the game, probably sort of needs highlighting. We had him on the show a couple of weeks ago just to highlight it, but Manny completing his walk from Wolverhampton up to Newcastle, because although the game was crap at the weekend, or it was at least a crap result, at least, like, you know, one genuinely positive and quite frankly outstanding achievement came out of it.
Yeah, it was brilliant achievement. What was nice as well, when me and my mate was there, when he was walking up, and like, you could hear the Newcastle fans had also come next to the Wolves fans and was talking about it and clapping, which was nice to see. So both sets of fans were like cheering him on in the last couple of steps. But yeah, unbelievable and really, really good, especially all for charity and everything. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, can't knock him. I mean, it's an incredible task for anyone to do. I'm really proud of what the club have done with it as well. I'm giving it a lot of more coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, each time that he does something like this and there's a charity event, they seem to give it a little bit more and a little bit more. And the fact that you've got Gary O'Neill talking about it so openly in sort of like press conferences and to the public and that, it's good because it brings awareness to a great cause. And, you know, congratulations to Manny for raising as much money as he has so far. And I'm sure that money will continue to rise in the coming days as well.
Yeah, it's just a shame he had to walk all those steps up. When he got to the end of it, I did feel sorry for him. When you sort of see that, and he said in our preview show pre-Sheffield United, it was that he was on. It kind of kick-started, because after he did it, after he walked to Chelsea last year or the year before, and someone said, oh, well, it's the equivalent of walking up the steps to St. James's Park. And yeah, I'm partly avoiding the game, to be honest, but I always think, you know, good stuff like that needs mentioning. I'd rather start the show with something good than us kind of go right into a 3-0 defeat. But yeah, we did lose. I don't think it was necessarily as bad as it feels on paper, but that's what we're here to discuss, guys. As always, big thanks if you're tuning in live on YouTube, or if you're watching back on there, make sure you like, share and subscribe. And if you're listening to us on podcast, please make sure you leave us a review, because it helps with the algorithms, etc. Couple of surprises in terms of the lineup. We knew that Wang wasn't likely, it wasn't going to be fit, so we had a front three of Sarabia, Neto and Bellegarde, which on paper it doesn't necessarily have that great fit in terms of having a kind of a natural center forward. Dawson came back in from the cup game in the week as well, and we had Semedo back as well, and Doyle replacing Gomez, who didn't make the squad at all in terms of injury as well. Chifo, initial thoughts when you sort of saw the lineup?
A little bit of concern, because it is that lack of a focal point. You know, it's the one thing that we've worked on, having sort of a sort of false nine up there to try and do something, and seeing how these three guys, how they interact with each other and how they play with each other in Bellegarde, Neto and Sarabia, is, you know, it was going into it, we didn't really understand how we were going to compete against a side like Newcastle, you know, who are very big players at the back. You know, all you got to do is look at Dan Burn at left back, how tall he is. And they are powerhouses, and these slight guys, you know, they might struggle against players like that. And that was always the concern. And the other main one is Joao Gomez not being involved as well. It's always a concern because he's a good footballer, and the progression that he's had this year, and seeing the way that he's come from being a very green player from Brazil to being a stalwart in a Premier League side is impressive. And to remove any sort of talent like that from a Premier League side is going to make a massive difference.
Yes. Tom, how about you?
To be fair, when I first saw the lineup, I thought it was a bit harsh on Santi Buena.
Mm.
I thought, because he'd done well. But then when we did play the game, there was a lot of the time where Dawson was doing really well on Isak throughout the game, so you can see why Dawson was back in the team. I thought Doyle done well. I think he was always going to come back in with Gomez going off with the cramp or the injury. Obviously, having Bellegarde in the nine, it's not his position, so he's kind of out of his depth, I feel, in a way. I think he seems a little bit lost sometimes, because I think he's more of a creator than a goal scorer. But one of my main concerns was actually the bench.
Yes. Like
when I was looking at the bench, I thought, look, it's really thin. It reminded me of, I think it was under Large, where did we have two goalkeepers on the bench at one point?
Mm.
Something like that. And it just looks thin. And it just, like, you've got three academy players in there, which is great, but they've also been thrown in the deep end a little bit. I mean, it's brilliant to have the 15-year-old in Okudua, but should he be near it? Should he be near the team at 15? It's I don't know. I don't know if it's a sense of it looks bad, or if it's he's really that good that he's got into the team. I'm not sure which one to go with.
I mean, I think it's not. I say it's three academy lads plus Noah Lamina as well, who's, you know, basically a development player as well. You know, so in terms of like forward options, it's slim pickings, isn't it? And you know, when you compare it to like the subs that Newcastle could bring on, it is worrying. Because you kind of look at it and, yeah, I don't know whether we should have started Nathan Fraser or whether he's quite ready for it. And, you know, we'll touch on that sort of halftime switch in a bit, I guess. But just, it doesn't exactly kind of spell worry into the opposition. I mean, like, compared to like Brighton midweek, you know, you could bring on Neto. And just all of a sudden, like, having that extra bit of quality off the bench is just going to make the opposition think more. And, you know, Newcastle, they deserved their win, no two ways about it. But if we were still 0-0 after an hour, like, if I was Newcastle, I'd have just stayed calm, because it's not like we were going to have to impact the game offensively to really nick 3 points. If it was still tied going on later. But it seemed for me that, like, Wolves' tactic was to try and smash and grab and do something quite early, because we were pressing so hard, so high up for those sort of initial 10, 15 minutes. And I thought, we've got a chance here. I thought we'd just done that bit of homework to kind of really make them think about it. Neto had a good run, which went out for a corner, and we had a couple other ones where, you know, we're winning the ball really high up. And, you know, I thought we started the game really well. It just kind of dropped off pretty monumentally, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, and sort of, you're saying about being on the front foot. I mean, that kind of, we saw that against Sheffield United as well. We tried to take the game to them early on. And the similar sort of things started to creep into this game as well, with the high line and being caught out potentially in hot and quick turnovers. Even against a side like Newcastle, they've still got a lot of pace, like Anthony Gordon, who can carry the ball at pace at you, run at you with the ball. And so that's always a big concern. And looking at it now, and with Dawson in the side, Dawson is a very good defender. But I worry about playing such a high line consistently that we're going to get caught out by a better side eventually. And lo and behold, sort of 3-0 against Newcastle, even though looking at the goals, maybe not so much, but against an actual top four side, top six side, we could be onto a hounding if we do that high line again, because it's concerning to watch the ball go over the top all the time.
Yeah. It was bizarre in a way, because you'd think, I don't know, for a lot of this season, or at least, you know, over the winter period, we have been like a little bit more steely defensively and have kind of kept the midfielders closer to the defenders. But there's been a couple of games, you say recently, where we've tried to be a lot more aggressive. And partly I think that's to do with the injuries and not having Kuna as much as anyone else, because it's only really kind of come to the fore since he's been out of the side, I assume, because he offers us so much from that positional awareness that the likes of Doyle and Lamina, and we can't have it two ways, can we? That you know, I've been praising, you know, we praise them for getting forward, we praise them for, you know, the likes of Gomez scoring the other day against Spurs, getting to and pushing forward. We praise Lamina for scoring the winner against Brighton because he gambled and pushed forward. Is this just the other side of a coin of, you know, and, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's just the risk you have when you do these high press, and when you are going to go into games going that quick, teams are going to try and just knock it past you. And as soon as they've done one or two passes, they're in on goal. It's, you know, I mean, like Jaffo said, we saw it against Sheffield United. I think it was the first half, I'm pretty sure. McCarthy had that chance. It was one-on-one, and so did Brewster. So, obviously, a different team, put them away and you're 2-0 down. But I think the problem is, it's when that doesn't work, what is our game plan? Because if that doesn't work, it seems to be like we're kind of stuck then. Like, if we can't do this high press or this counter-attack, it's like we're stuck. And I think it's this playing out from the back, like we saw against Sheffield United, played it across the back a lot, waited, really patient. I think that's like our plan B. And I feel like we're kind of learning on the job with it, really. And there was that clip that went out when it was Jose Sarr apparently was talking to someone in the South Bank. This is according to some comments that I read, but apparently someone said that he was actually saying to the fans, like, when we've got the ball, like, in defence, just be calm because we're trying to play out with it. It seems to me like the learning on the job for, like, a plan B in a way.
Yeah. It's frustrating because I think a lot went into yesterday's performance in terms of personnel, arguably tactics, and the fatigue. Newcastle played, had a day extra recovery, but played half an hour more, etc. But this is like a unit who were just dead on their feet from about the half hour mark, really. But let's talk about the first goal, because I think it flexes between being unlucky and us not quite covering the shop, because we were just split open in two, and Newcastle carried the ball, moved it forward. We thought Dawson had got enough of a block on it, and it just looped perfectly to Isak at the far post, who nodded it home. Again, how avoidable? Where does it sort of sit on the avoidable to unlucky scale for you, Jeffo?
It's difficult to say, because you try and cover all the bases. You say, okay, maybe Toti is a little bit tighter to Isak, but if he is, he's in the wrong position. Because you can't account for the ball bouncing off Dawson in such a way to loop into the space. It's unavoidable. It's just one of those goals. You kind of just have to hold your hands up and go, oh, okay, well, we kind of should have done a little bit better in the build-up part side of it. It's in the moment of where Dawson gets across and makes the block. You're in the luck of the gods, really, with it, of where the ball goes. And then, unfortunately for us, it goes straight to Isak, who... you won't have an easier finish this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as well, you have to have a bit of luck as well. I mean, like Jafar just said, if Tossie's covering that position, why would he? I think as well that shows Newcastle's gamble to get players forward. Because on another day, someone takes that shot, Dawson blocks it, and Sarr just comes and collects, and we're on the counter-attack again. But because they want to play the counter-attack, that's just them putting bodies forward. I think it's just one of those where, like Jeffo said, you just have to put your hands up on them.
Yeah, and I think the way I kind of look at it, particularly with kind of counter-attacking goals, is it always feels so preventable when you're the defending team. Because obviously, you could argue, oh, we committed one too many men forward. Semedo should have been further back. But we score quite a healthy number of goals on the counter-attack, and, we never lambast for defending. Like, look at Gomez's second against Spurs, where it's similar-ish in terms of it being on the break. It does kind of just happen. When you can kind of pull off a sweeping counter-attack, it's brutally effective. It's frustrating and disappointed, because, you want to kind of make those blocks and stop those opportunities in the box. But, and again, we're against a good Newcastle side, very reason they are where they are. All right, they're not having the same kind of level of season that they did like the year before, but they're eighth. Okay, they've let frog us now, sort of thing. But I guess that's the difference between that kind of defending and being that open against Sheffield United, who, with all due respect, are the worst team in this league, compared to a top 10 side, and you get punished for it. And ultimately, because we don't have the reinforcements, it was always going to be an uphill battle from 1-0, but we had a really great chance. I think it was at 1-0 with Toti Gomez from a very clever set piece routine, and it's sliding doors, but if that went in, maybe it's a different story.
Yeah, well, I think so, definitely. I mean, that chance was just 7 minutes after they've scored.
Yeah.
And, if he heads that in, I think the whole game changes, because Newcastle probably think, whoa, they might even lay off then the press, because we would have had the momentum then. And it could have been a change of pace, but, it's just one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating. You say it's like the fine margins in football. And okay, the first one was, if we chalk down the first to being unlucky and just one of those, I think the second one is thoroughly preventable personally. And one that
with Kilman and Saar, they're both experienced enough to do better in that situation. I don't quite know what went wrong, or, you know, if it was Saar's, as Stu would say, his weekly moment of madness, and finally got a bit punished for it. But yeah, that was a frustrating goal. And it wasn't even just the snapshot that I'm showing on the screen in terms of where they kind of collided. You know, I think we should have done more in terms of getting the ball away in the first phase anyway.
You're not wrong. I mean, you always look at a preventable goal, you look at it through, as you say, stages, and letting a ball come into a box so easily and to come into such a dangerous area is frustrating, because it's the one area that we've looked good this season is in the fullbacks. And so we've talked about him doing so well, like Nuri doing so well, and Samado doing so well this season, and then they allow that to come across. And then just a complete moment of madness from Kilman and Saar. I mean, Kilman should be screaming, leave it, just booting it fucking out. And if Saar wants to come and get it, he's got to take everyone out. He's got to take Kilman out and get the ball and get gone. He can't half measure it. And it's frustrating when you see that, because Jose Saar is a very, very, very good goalkeeper, and he gets a lot of shit that he doesn't really deserve, because he is... someone who takes a lot of chances, yeah, granted, but he is still head and shoulders above Rui Patricio, who we had before. It was an upgrade, and stats only show that, because the thing is, we have conceded less goals in terms of what was expected against us, and he puts up good numbers all the time. He's a very good goalkeeper, and moments like this only feed the moronic bullshit that gets fed up towards him on Twitter and other social media, because he doesn't really deserve it, because he is a very, very good goalkeeper, and we would struggle to replace him, to be honest, if he ever went. Because to put money down for a goalkeeper now, you're talking David Royer, who's probably his equal, went for big money to Arsenal. So it's difficult to say, how do you look in a moment of madness, but you kind of just have to go, okay, I fucked up, hold my hands up, let's go. Go again. But they've been few and far between this season for Saar, and besides his kicking, he hasn't really done a lot wrong, and he ain't really cost as many points, which is a positive. But in moments like this, you do want to scream and pull your hair out with him, but I don't mind it. He brings culture, a bit of laughter, and say he's a good goalkeeper along the way.
Yeah, I think the second goal, like you said, Rich, it's completely avoidable. And it's more annoying because it's come from our own mistakes. I think Saar has a right to come out. I think, you know, as a goalkeeper, you're going to want to protect your box. You're going to make the box yours. And, you know, if he has to take out Kilman, like Jafel said, do it by all means. But again, I don't think he deserves the hate that Saar gets. I don't think we should go and sell him or anything like some people come out and say. Because when a mistake like this happens, everyone looks at the goalkeeper. When really, I think they're both as bad as each other. They both need to communicate better. Which, don't get me wrong, they probably do in training. But you're always going to have situations like this, and it's just more annoying when it's your two own players colliding together through your own mistake.
Yeah. I had a great comment on YouTube from Mike Evans. He said, sadly, keepers, when they make a mistake, it's huge. Personally, I think Saar's in the wrong, because he's the one who's had to come out and try and claim the ball. He doesn't need to come out. Like, the best case scenario for Saar there is he clears out everyone in his way, whereas actually he stays in, you know, it's not his game, I know, but actually he stays in his 6-yard box. That isn't an issue there. And again, yeah, that's where the communication comes in. That's where, you know, it was chucking it down. Like, it was torrential. And I think particularly after that goal, I know, like, you know, Tommy Doyle, who I thought started the game really well, his passing just dropped off a cliff when, you know, it started lashing it down really bad. So I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's such a cock-up that you need to worry about, but it's just frustrating because you know that those two players in particular are better than that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you say, if it's not his game, but like Trevor said, if we had Rui Patricio, he wouldn't have even come out for that.
Yeah.
But then if that, you know, if it's not Sarr's game to come off his line, then we probably would concede a lot more from corners and set pieces because he does command his box a lot. So, it's to and from, really. I mean, it's going to happen. You know, you are going to make a mistake once in a while. It's just more annoying when it comes off your own player.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, 2-0 down with after, 30-odd minutes, it's never exactly a great sign. You can't be looking at the players on the pitch and wondering, you know, where's the comeback going to come from? And I remember there being a point where the ball got moved out really quickly to Neto on the right-hand side. And I think he went past one, but he looked so shattered. You know, he basically cut back inside on himself, whereas like 2 weeks ago, he'd have tried to knock it past him and kind of belted down the line. And I think he kind of personified how tired some of these players looked, particularly ones who have played kind of a continuous amount of games. And yeah, it was frustrating because you know, you look to your star men, don't you? In times of need, and unfortunately he couldn't and didn't answer the call yesterday. And you know, when you see at half time, oh, two substitutions being made and Sarr's one of them and then Neto's the other, it's like what you said earlier, Tom, in terms of like you're looking at the bench and like Newcastle must have just thought we've got this one in the bag now when they saw Bentley and Nathan Fraser coming on.
Yeah. I said when I walked out the ground, though, I said to my mate, like, that's the problem. I said to him at the time, I said, that's the problem when the managers don't get backed. Because I think Nathan Fraser's a good player, but it's a lot of pressure on a kid 2-0 down away from home, especially at Newcastle, to expect to get us back in the game. Obviously, at the same time, we had FFP issues and whatnot, but you know, there's if, buts and maybes about it, really. But I think it's a lot of pressure on Fraser to come on at that stage. And I think as well, the injuries that we've got. So apparently Neto's got tight hamstring. Cunha was hamstring as well, I'm pretty sure. And so was Wang. And I think that kind of shows as well the amount of running that the players are doing.
Yeah.
If it's the same injury, as much as like I love it, I love the work rate, the, you know, you're going to run into the ground for your team. But it, I don't know, there just comes a point where it's kind of concerning when three of your attackers all have the same injury.
Yeah, it does feel like they've just been worn into the ground. And I'm a bit on the fence in terms of the kind of the backing in January. I think I understand why they tried to move on Sas Kladnic and Fabio Silva because they weren't part of Gary O'Neill's plans. I really struggle to understand like the ability to get rid of two senior football players and then not have anyone to come in to replace them. And now either Gary Neal has just outrightly sort of said they're just simply not in my plans. No way. Like, you know, I'd rather play a 19, you know, quite literally a 15-year-old. I'd rather play a child than play Fabio Silva. Then I find a bit of a struggle. But at the same time, actually, I think a lot ultimately lies with someone like, you know, someone with a manager who although he has done fantastic for us, he has not been here an awful amount of time. And I think to potentially dictate what players are his type of player when his body of work is quite limited anyway, it's difficult, I know, and this ain't Football Manager, But I think actually he needs to do more to manage that situation with both of those players, because it's easy to forget Sasha Kladnic did come off the bench and score goals for us and won us two games this season. And okay, you can throw whatever you want at kind of that statement, but ultimately it is that it's the manager's job. It's the club's responsibility to try and keep those players happy. Because all that happens is said players, if they're not playing, will want to go, which is what's happened with Sasha Kladnic is he's wanted first team football. Fabio Silva's a slightly different situation, I guess, to a degree, but he's still not quite shown enough this season. Mm-hmm. But then you end up in a situation, don't you, where you're only, you know, three games away from an injury crisis.
Mm.
And now, I know Sasha Kladnic immediately gets injured because he's got knees made of glass. But to ship out two senior players, when you look at that bench, when you look at the injury players we've got, as Martin said, we all saw this coming. And we did. You know, you could see it in January, that at the end of January, it's like, oh, fantastic, we're doing great. But we're going to get injuries. And it's almost, again, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Did you two see that injury table? Well, like, I think Wolves have had the least amount of days injured in the squad. Now, amazing, but it's a bit of a red flag because it's like, it's going to come. That's the sort of thing you judge at the end of the season, not two-thirds of the way through, in my opinion.
I mean, yes, just circling back on what you just said, Rich, I mean, it might sound like I'm pulling, towing the club's line here a little bit, but I mean, the decision to get rid of Fabio and Sasha was probably made a lot longer before the start of even December.
Mm.
And I remember Johnny had his outbreak in December and he had to go because you can't keep somebody like that at the club. Now the club had to pay out his contract, and I think that was what they were saying was the difference between bringing in a striker and fall into profit and sustainability rules. And if that is the case, that's very, very frustrating. And I'm very annoyed at Johnny for wanting his contract paid up in full and for acting in the way he has, because he's potentially is the one who by proxy has caused a lot of these issues. Because I feel like the decision with Sasha and Fabio would have been made a big period of time before that window, because they would have needed to arrange with clubs like Frankfurt and Rangers weeks and weeks in advance. It don't just happen over a whim. So you can't prepare for things like what happened with Johnny, and that kind of, when you're so close to falling foul of these rules, I'd rather the club err on the side of caution and not do what Everton's done and what Forest have done and just throw guns to the wall sort of thing, because it ain't good, because long term it will start biting you in the ass. It will give you points deductions, and you know, I'd rather the club actually be a little bit more sustainable and a little bit more self-funded, because we've seen what happens with the club. We're in this position because we've thrown money at people like Fabio Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, and Nunes as well, even players like that. We've thrown a lot of money at players thinking that they're going to take us to a next level, when really the best value we've had in transfer fees has been sort of between sort of 8 and 15 million. All you got to do is look at Joe Gomez, Mario Lemina. These are the ones who've made a massive difference to the club, not just on the football pitch, but off the football pitch. All you have to do is look at all the stuff on YouTube and social media and the positive, effort that they make to make the club a better place, welcoming. It's a place that people want to be and enjoy. I just don't get that impression with some of these more expensive signings. So the club more frugal, I'm happier about that, because it seems to get better results.
Yeah. Just had a comment from Stu Kelsall on YouTube. Agreed, Jafo, the biggest area the club has to focus on is its development and lower value transfers, likes of Doyle. And yeah, you're right. And I completely agree. I want our club to be, you know, run I was going to say financially ethical, at least. But you need to have everyone bought into that. And if that means using the resources that you've got, even if it's for that bit longer, like Fabio Silva, where, all right, I'm being quite harsh on the guy because I don't know him. Hopefully I'm not libeling myself here when I say it, but he doesn't seem like he's the greatest personality. To put it politely, I don't know in terms of that, but it's up to, you know, the club to have that open dialogue shortly with the, you know, the back office, with the, you know, with Gary O'Neill and his team, saying like, look, unfortunately you might have to change a bit about how you're approaching the game because these are the players you're sort of stuck with. And again, the argument, I guess, and I'm sort of arguing my own point here, is that we took Fabio Silva's wage or a proportion of it off the bill for 6 months. The aim was to do that for Sasha Kladnich, who I think was on a healthy packet as well. That's not kind of panned out because he's now not playing at all. It's not raising his market value, and he's still charging the club his weekly salary. So, yeah, it's frustrating that, you know, either we didn't invest in January or the club couldn't manage the likes of Kladnich better or Fabio Silva better. And it's hard for me. It's hard because the drop off in the way we played in the last two full months since January without using either of those players, we're a different team. Don't get me wrong. We are so fluid. The players have got that understanding, you know, whether it's Huang, you know, whether it's Kuna, Huang, Neto, Sarabia, even Bellegarde, that core unit kind of just sort of click, particularly when you've got Kuna or Huang as your glue in the middle. And Kladnich and Fabio weren't offering that, unfortunately. But, you know, it's all ifs and buts, isn't it? But, you know, Fraser coming on, it at least gave us, I guess, in O'Neill's head, that more focal point moving forwards. And, you know, he did have a couple of moments. He did have a shot saved, which I did think there was a point just before he had his chance where Gomez had this ridiculous goal line clearance where he just kind of hooked it like almost behind himself and away. And I thought if that was at 1-0 at that point, that was like almost one of these game-changing events where it's like, hang on, that's something for us to build upon. And then, like, we had a couple of chances. So Fraser had a good chance. Sarabia had a good chance. And it was only through the good work of Dubravka we arguably didn't pull one back. Because I think maybe at that point, probably about 65th, 70th minute, I think if it was 2-1, I think that would have been a roughly fair scoreline at that point.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Fraser done pretty well. To be honest, I'm pretty sure we got our first shot on target, if I'm not wrong. But that drives you forward, just him taking that shot, you know, and then Sarabia obviously had a good chance. And like you say, Dubravka's done well, to be honest. Fraser's shot was going in the bottom corner. He's had to get low to save it and still parry it away. It wasn't like he's caught it like he was in training. He's had to parry the shot away. Strabby's chance again, close range. He's just made himself big. Another day, that could come off his arm and go in the goal or go through his legs or something. So it's just those fine moments. If we do pull one back, again, like I said earlier, we've got the momentum then. And that's when we're most dangerous. It's like, I mean, like the Man United game a few weeks ago, even though we lost on like the last minute, we score on the 85th and then we're back level about 10 minutes later, I think it was. So, you know, it's those type of moments that push you forward as a team. Another day, they go in and the game could be completely different and we could be sat here saying we've done a comeback and won 3-2.
Yeah. It's one of those, isn't it? But it felt like that window, after that Sarabia chance, it felt like that window closed in terms of us getting a goal. And I think, I don't know, it's bizarre. I always find it bizarre that when you have a chance and you don't score it, like it almost knocks the wind out of our sails for me. that we kind of just didn't quite have the same gusto, and Newcastle really kind of stepped up their game after that point and really tried to put the game beyond doubt, obviously. And again, I suppose there's a difference. You know, they bring on Almiron and, you know, you've got Bruno Guimarães threading no-look passes over the top of us and things like that. And I guess the day ends rather frustratingly by conceding the third goal. And again, it was just tired legs and tired minds, wasn't it? And again, thoroughly preventable.
Yeah, I think that just happens when you put that many men forward. I think 2-0 down, we've just put everyone forward and thought, you know, let's just try and grab a goal or let's try and get down with a fight. And it's kind of, you either get one back and it ends 2-1 or it goes like this and they catch you on the break. And as soon as he was played through, you kind of knew, like, there's a big chance here because I think we had just, I think it was just Dawson who was back. And then Ait Nouri's got to sprint back 60, 70 yards to get to him. And at one point, I thought we'd actually keep it out. And then obviously, he's pretty much like walked it in a way. The way, like, just rolled it in. But I think that just happens because we put so many forward. I think that either ends 2-1 or 3-0 like it did.
Yeah. It's so frustrating, isn't it? And, you know, when you sort of see Dawson just completely get his feet stuck in mud effectively, you know it's not going to be your day.
Yeah, it's just one of those moments. Like Tom says, you're chasing the game. You're going to take risks. You put Dawson one-on-one with some, you know, a player like that, you know, he's going to make a difference. And the sloppiness of the goal, it encapsulates that, just the feeling of the whole game. It's just like the microcosm of the whole game and how it feels. Just to say, okay, we could have done a lot more. To be fair, reading into what Gary O'Neill said after the game, I think he was maybe a little bit more coy than he really was about it, because having a lot of points to take away and learn from is good going into such an important period of our season. You know, we're still in a good position in terms of the league. We're still a couple of wins away from being in a position where we want to be. And, you know, let's not forget, we've got Coventry coming up as well in the FA Cup. We get past that, we're at Wembley again. And having time now to sort of get through some of these issues that we have got in terms of how do we play without Cunha, how do we play without Hwang, and figuring out how we deal with that and how we come through that tough nature and those tough positions. And as Tom says earlier, we kind of developed this sort of plan B on the fly. I'd rather do it now than in games where it makes a big difference to our season, like the Coventry game will. And sort of looking ahead, you know, you want to see people like Nathan Frazier now get more minutes because it gives us another dimension to try. And by bringing in people like Nathan Frazier, as you say earlier, it makes the bench stronger because one of them three's got to go out. You've got a Bellegarde, you've got a Neto, you've got a Sarabia. One of them three is going to be on the bench and he looks a lot stronger. And it only gives Nathan Frazier confidence because when he's been on the pitch, he's not looked out of place as a footballer. He's someone who he should thrive in this in sort of environment because it's not so much of a position where Fabio Silva was in going after the Raul injury, where he knew long term he was going to be in there and there was going to be a lot of pressure on him. It's going to be maximum 6 weeks until one of Cunha or Hwang's back. So there's no real pressure on him. He's only going to play 60 minutes every week. So it's now's the time to bed players like that in and sort of give him a chance. And he hasn't got a better sort of run of fixtures coming up than, say, Fulham and Coventry to play more minutes. And Nathan Frazier can only get benefit from that and the club can only benefit from that because it gives us more ideas, more strength and more development time for younger players coming through. So to try and twist a positive from sort of the negative of the last few weeks, that would probably be it.
Well, I think you're completely right. And I guess that kind of kind of brings us on to the injury update latest. Actually, before we do so, make sure if you haven't already to check out some of the latest offers over at Kitbag. You can get lots of lovely Wolves merch from there. We've just done a fantastic competition via the Fancast, via Kitbag and Fanatic. So you can get your retro tops, your replica tops, wall art, training gear, whatever you're after. If you go to kitbag.evy.net/fancast, links in the description, guys. Make sure you go check it out. Injury wise, so as we sort of mentioned, Gomez didn't feature at all. Yesterday, Sarr and Neto came off at half time, and of course Kun has been injured for a couple of games now, and Wang got injured against Brighton. It was confirmed after a Brighton game that Wang and Kun are still going to be out for around 6 weeks, which, bearing in mind Kun has been out for two already, I guess, and it was sort of not as bad as first feared. That was a bit funny in terms of your timelines. In regards to Sarr, he's picked up a bit of a quad strain slash dead leg, so he should be fit for Fulham. Gomez apparently could have made the bench potentially, but they effectively decided to rest him, which I think is probably a good decision. And you know, again, Neto pulled up with a tight hamstring, but all being well, expecting him to be fit for Fulham. I mean, it'd be great if Sarr, Gomez and Neto are back, but it just sort of highlight, you know, effectively half our starting lineup are, you know, really struggling at the moment.
I'd agree. I think it's worrying with the players coming back in from injury, because in an ideal world, you want to bed them in. You want to give them, you know, 30 minutes, 60 minutes. You know, you want to build them up to a game. What worries me is if we go and play Gomez and Neto and Sarr even in the starting lineup on Saturday, then you've got to play Coventry a week later. Hmm. And obviously that game is huge. And like, I done a vote on X, you know, which would we rather focus on, the FA Cup or the league? And I think it was about 91%. On the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Because, let's be honest, like, I'm happy, I'm more than happy finishing 10th, 11th and, you know, going to Wembley again. Because, I've said it for ages now. Me personally, I don't think we'll sneak into Europe. I think we'll stick around 10th. But let's not forget everything that we sold in the summer. We had Lopetegui was 4 days before the season. So if Gary O'Neill does take us to Wembley and say we finish 10th, 11th, 9th, then he's done a fantastic job.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way I kind of look at it is, where does sort of six weeks kind of takes you up until mid-April. I've got it down, according to, you know, good people at Google, it's about the 12th of April. It's about 6 weeks' time. Now, the FA Cup semi-final weekend is the 20th and 21st of April. So I guess it's well, you kind of almost expecting and hoping that Wolves beat Coventry in 2 weeks. And that would push your Arsenal game back that's happening on the 20th to kind of condense it probably the middle of the week after. But we are still going to be without Kun and Huang for, you know, Fulham, Coventry, Villa at home, Burnley. Villa away. Burnley away, West Ham at home, and Forest as well. So, you know, and that's, I guess, if it's all going well. So it's still kind of a decent chunk. But I think, Jaffo, as you kind of said, it gives players another opportunity, and players who are quietly trying to step up, and you know, it'll be interesting to sort of see if Gary O'Neill does anything quite mavericky, and I know tries and plays Hugo Bueno as a left wing but plays Ait Nouri on that wide left attacking option as well, and really kind of, you know, puts potentially square pegs in round holes, or just tries something completely different to eke out what we've got in the squad.
Yeah, and I sort of trust him to do that because when we have got into games where we've done something a little bit different, especially like even you look when he went on Sky, I think it was after the Brentford game, and he highlighted the work that they'd done in there. It kind of, you when you go into games, you kind of build on what you've got as a foundation, but you look at the sort of specifics of it. I'll give it words in a minute. But the specifics of the actual game. And it's having players who are adaptable. You know, you've only got to look at it and think, okay, Hugo Bueno used to play as a 10. That was what he used to play in a camp when he was a development player. So you have got players there who do understand other roles. And, you know, we've seen it with Aynuri when he played a lot at left wing at points during even this season and last. We've got players who are adaptable. People want to buy into what's been done by Gary because you can only see the positive of where we are with what O'Neill's doing is he's allowing the clubs to buy in, the clubs and the players to buy into what he wants to do and his philosophy for on the pitch, and having players who will kind of sit in and do a job in different areas of the pitch and having the ability to do it and using the strengths and what they have kind of helps, because we even saw that at points this season where Doherty went on as a makeshift left winger forward and did well. And I mean, okay, granted that led to the Sarabia incident where he marked on social media, but he's showing that people will go into different roles and are willing to try different things because they trust the manager and they're buying to what he wants to do.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I'm still kind of bizarrely optimistic, and I think hopefully the fact we don't have a midweek game is going to just allow particularly the likes of Neto and Gomez, and I guess it's the other players as well who feel the knock-on effect of an injury as well. So Sarabia has played quite a lot of minutes recently. Lamina eats up a lot of minutes, and you know he struggled against Brighton and stuff like that, and then plays again the next day as well. So you know, if it's not one, there's always another, isn't there? That kind of might be feeling the effect of it. So, yeah, but you say, like, if it maybe it gives someone like Nathan Fraser that more opportunity to shine. You know, maybe it gives someone like Hugo Bueno a different opportunity. So, let's say, hopefully they can take it with two hands. And I am an R. Hey, we'll preview the Forest, sorry, Coventry show in a few weeks. Don't get me wrong, but I'd be half tempted to play Fraser up front if we've got Neto fit and if we've got maybe Sarabia fit as well, so we can like truly support him, because he's shown glimpses enough that he's more than competent and doesn't look a complete fish out of water. So yeah, I mean, it's time will tell, and I guess the mood of the club will be dictated you know, I guess from next week, because it's never nice losing, but I think everyone, you can write off one game, which I think we're all happy to do after yesterday. It's kind of harder to, you know, emotionally reconcile two defeats on the bounce, but you know, that's next Sunday's issue, isn't it? Couple of other bits and bobs that have come out. So Wolves have released their financial information for the 2022 to 2023 financial year. I guess, however much you want to go into these, I think it was relatively close to your FFP. I think there was about 19 million difference it totaled in the end. We spent a record amount on players during that financial year. I think it was 211 million, but only did sort of sales of around 51 million to what we paid about 69 on those players. So bear in mind, this is, let's say, from 2022 to 2023. So it doesn't count in like Neves, the Nunes sales or anything like that as well. So, yeah, I mean, do you think it justifies? I mean, I don't know how much you boys have kind of read into any of the bits and pieces on the finances, but do you think it kind of justifies Fosun's reluctance to heavily invest in the last two transfer windows?
I think we'd much rather be reading those tweets than reading tweets that we've had points deducted.
Yeah, 1,000% Tom.
So I think that's kind of the way you've got to look at it. I mean, I know what I said earlier about you don't back him and now you've got a short bench, but it's either we go all out and it comes back on you, or we just have to get on with it. I mean, I read a couple of days ago, I think Fabrizio Romano put it on, that Dia, who he was interested in, obviously it fell through. The manager wanted to play him for the last 8 minutes and he said no. And apparently his relationship with the club has like completely collapsed since they wouldn't let him move to Wolves. So I think you go into the summer, I think that's a pretty easy transfer, in my opinion. I don't know if they'll look at it from a personal aspect. For example, that could be somewhat similar to what Nuno's done when he didn't show up to training with us, in a sense. So they might look at it in that way, in personality. But, I mean, if we was interested in him then, and if we do have FFP issues or anything like that, or we want to spend small and not big, I think that's an easy transfer to go into.
Yeah, definitely. I guess last two bits and pieces then, guys. So in terms of how we're looking on the league table, yeah, we've dropped a couple of places, mainly due to the Newcastle beating us, but we are still top half of the table, sitting on 38 points. Again, I think we kind of alluded to earlier, we are very much likely to finish in that middle pack of this, you know, 7th to 11th sort of area at the moment, unless we can kind of really push on once more. It's still looking interesting at the bottom. Obviously, with Everton's points reduction, that's kind of seen them get a little bit more space. But yeah, interested to sort of see what happens with Forest as well. I mean, it's talks of them putting a legal claim against fucking VAR, which is bonkers, in my opinion. Because, yeah, they were out of Dubai, but they also had, I think it was about a minute and a half as well. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's still sort of sitting all right for Wolves at the moment. And hopefully we can turn things around against Fulham next week. But until we say our goodbyes, we had a question on Instagram at the preview show, and I forgot to read it out, I'll be honest. We had a lot to talk about because we talked about Brighton, we talked about Newcastle and X, Y, and Z. But a friend of the show, Dean Marston, asked, and it's still applicable because we're still suffering from injuries, guys. If you had to pick one Fancastian to play at top in this injury crisis, who are you picking and why? Jiffo, I'm going to pass it over to you first.
Oh, easy, mate. He'll love me for saying this as well, Tom Calvert. He's pacey guy, loves football, plays football with a smile on his face. He's a fantastic individual. So, he'll love me for saying it.
He does still play very regularly as well, doesn't he? Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I don't think I've seen any of us play football.
No, you won't have seen us play, have you? You're too much of a newbie to know. Yeah. You know who I'd go for an outside bet? He'd need to pick up his fitness very quickly, Jiffo, but Luke Thompson.
Yeah, Luke's a good footballer as well. He's got a hell of a strike on him. He can hit a ball with absolute venom.
I was going to say, he used to be Wolverhampton's Saturday League's finest, Luke Thompson, at a period of time before he became a FIFA beast. He'd probably need to work on his fitness a bit more now. Now he looks a bit more like Roberto Carlos. It's a needless dig. It's such a needless
it really
dig.
Is.
Considering he's a far better footballer and probably in far better shape than me. That's probably a good point to wrap up the show, isn't it, before everyone starts insulting my appearance. So make sure you're following Wolves Fancast for all your Wolves lols and trolls. We're at Wolves Fancast here, there and everywhere. And as I mentioned earlier, we have got a partnership with Kitbags and Fanatics at the moment. So make sure you go check it out for any of your Wolves merch. I'll stick the link in the description for you as well. We will be back midweek, of course, to preview that Fulham game towards the end of this week as well. But big thanks to everyone who's listening. Make sure you like, share and subscribe as well if you're listening on YouTube, and same again if you're listening on podcasts. And until next time, it's goodbye from Tom.
See you later.
It's goodbye from Defoe.
Keep the faith.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you next time.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.